Fisher Turner. It was a year when our bodies surrendered. Knees, backs, lungs. Listen to your shoulder, instructed my physiotherapist, who was also studying English literature at university. Wild nights, she'd quote from Emily Dickinson as she massaged my neck, which is still sometimes sore after one parachute jump too many 20 years ago. Risk was what I thought was needed, and yes, risk was good, but I had a tendency to overdo it. What wrecked my neck this time was the garden. It also took a toll on his lungs, which do not suffer pollen gladly. The family cold, which hung around for 5 weeks, showed no sign of departing. On top of which I lost my voice, which caused confusion at the doctor's when I went after being bitten by something in the garden. My arm started to swell, and the inflammation crept down towards my elbow as I struggled to explain that it wasn't my lack of voice I had come about. Pulling my sleeve up seemed to work, and the doctor was very impressed, as was the medical student who accompanied him. The doctor drew around the swelling, a shape that by this time resembled a very large and interesting potato, and said that if it got much bigger, or if I began to feel unwell, I should come back up smartly. That night the temperature plummeted. There was thunder and lightning and hailstones the size of marbles. We stayed inside for the next 2 days, with everybody coughing and me unable to speak, resting my sore red arm while the new ceiling insulation watched over us. At this point I remember someone commenting on an earlier poem of mine which resembles this one, saying some people might think it's not poetry. Well, there were the colds and the neck and the lungs and the bite, and then there was the hip, which is connected to the knee, though not literally. In between is the femur, which my friend Marion has broken. I have a Dutch hachet in the oven. For the purposes of this poem, if in fact it is a poem, I will call it a casserole, which involves lemons and cloves, and which I have made twice successfully, once unsuccessfully, before. Currently I am going through a phase where nothing I make tastes of anything, or everything I make tastes of nothing. I hope the casserole doesn't fall into this culinary hole. Shortly after the neck came the knee, which is where this poem really began. To explain, something happened which made me want to add to a poem I had thought was finished. I tried, but I had been right in the first place. That poem had somehow closed its doors in the way poems do, so I had to begin something new. My knee I injured running upstairs at the National Library. I knew this was not a good idea, but I was at work on a poetry exhibition, excited and full of a great sense of urgency. Poetry can do this to you. All day I ran up and down the stairs in search of books and manuscripts. When I woke the next morning, my knee was sore and I couldn't bend it very easily. I felt an impending sense of doom. Since I was quite young, I have had bad knees, the right always worse than the left. At 14, I had 6 weeks of plaster, then an operation, then another 6 weeks of plaster, after which my leg emerged, wasted, and looking and feeling as if it belonged to someone else. Around my knee was an impressive scar shaped like a question mark. After a lot of physio and lifting weights made from my father's socks filled with sand and draped over my ankle, my knee improved. It's years ago now, and although it still troubles me sometimes, mostly it's all right. I'm not meant to run or play sports, like tennis or squash, which involve sudden changes of direction. Poetry, being low impact, is fine. After the stairs, I went to see the orthopaedic specialist who carved the question mark on my knee. For the purposes of this poem, we'll call him Chris. We might as well, because that's his name. We talked about joints and their weaknesses, and that led us to my father's rare, wonky ankle, which Chris told me had been written about in a British medical journal. He promised to find the article in the medical library and send it to me. After my knee recovered and the poetry exhibition opened, I began writing in my shed, which is up on the lawn at the back of our house. Am I working hard? Yes, I am. I've been writing and thinking and clearing a space near the vegetable garden for another shed, this time for the children. It's been good working to make room for this shed, even though it's meant some mornings spent with a shovel instead of working on this poem. I've developed a sore back, but nothing serious, just an ache. Like my sister who wrote from London to say, among other things, that she'd hurt hers, getting off her bike. We're all getting older and sadder. Clearing a space for the shed has meant packing the vegetable garden into cardboard boxes and moving it down the steps to outside the kitchen door. Once the shed is built, it can go back again, but I'm fearful of plants being trampled. Sean, our builder, is careful, but he thinks a lot about surfing and sometimes doesn't watch where he's putting his feet. Occasionally he doesn't turn up because the southerly has dropped and the surf is good. I don't mind this. I like the fact that he also has his mind on other things. I knew he was all right when he walked past the kitchen door one day and said, "I smell soup. Have you got a bacon hock in that?" Fitter Turner is an occupation I've been thinking about lately. The word's doing just that in my head. It's because of my father's ankle. I think he could have done with someone in that trade. Every day these words come to me, and then, in the mail, comes the copy of the article about my father's ankle, written when I was 2. It's entitled, "Congenital Ball and Socket Ankle Joint," and talks of a boy aged 5, my father, being admitted to hospital with a disease of the cervical spine. This article recounts how, later, my father, aged 21, presented with a fracture of the tip of the lateral malleolus of the right ankle. A small effusion was present in the joint. A ball and socket ankle joint was present, and both tibia and fibula helped to form the proximal articular surface. The scaphoid was fused to the talus, and the cuboid articulated with the 4th metatarsal. The 5th metatarsal was absent. Only 2 cuneiforms were present. The 2nd toe had only 2 phalanges. The right limb was almost 1 inch shorter than the left. No abnormality was noted in the skull, chest, abdomen, pelvis, hands, knees, and renal tract. That came later. The x-rays of my father's spine, ankle and foot were the saddest things imaginable. I went outside and moved some earth. For 2 days I did this, until my back ached and my knees hurt so much I couldn't do it any longer. I went back to my shed and looked at the pictures again. For an odd moment I imagined those bones of my father's in the ground. But we didn't bury him, he burned and became ash. When the red curtains in the crematorium shushed close to conceal his coffin, our son called out, "Hey!" startled by the trick of it all. "Hey!" It was what we all wanted to say. The ash my father became was shocking in its greyness and grittiness. We scooped handfuls and scattered what he now was on the ground. What more can you say about this? Hey, that it is not the worst thing that can happen. In the middle of writing this poem, I had a dream I was wrestling with the ghost of Catherine Mansfield. A friend suggested it was a poem I was struggling with. Yes, this one. Which I know seems very plain and straightforward and conversational, but it's taken a lot to get it this way. Today I will take the casserole to Marion, who can now manage on one crutch, which is good because her husband, who coached the rowing crew I was coxswain for after being told I shouldn't row on account of my knees, is about to have a knee replacement and she needs to be able to get around. Tomorrow I fly to Nelson. I don't like flying, but I will grit my teeth and get on the plane. Last time I flew in a small plane, the pilot said before takeoff, "Life jackets are under your seats. If anything happens, put them on. Don't wait for me to tell you what to do, because I'll be out of here." In Nelson, I will be met by a woman who describes herself as having the ponytail of indifference. I look forward to this. She will drive me to the Rosy Glow chocolate shop, above which I will stay. I will lie down on the comfortable bed, then I will get up and go and read some poems. Later, I will go to a Haydn mass with the woman with the ponytail, who will sleep a beautiful, attentive sleep through the third and fourth movements. Next morning, I will buy some chocolates from Rosy Glow and go to the airport in a taxi driven by Dickie, who has woken up deaf in one ear. "Maybe the doctor," I will yell. 12:30, he'll reply and pass me a mint. I'll head home on a plane flown by a pilot who doesn't know his left from his right. And from the air, I'll see our house and my shed and the frame of the new shed taking shape by the vegetable garden. The weather will be beautiful, and I'll remember that today is the day a friend may learn that his life will be shorter than he would ever wish. Two friends will tell me their mothers are dying. My son will collect a cricket bat in the face, and his eye will turn the colours of evening. To pass the time at the hospital, he will ask me to list the things that never end. Space, time, the universe, dogs barking at the mailman, numbers, weather, fear, love, kindness, television, Haydn's mass. Then a doctor will come. And because we live in a very small pocket in the great big frock of the world, he will be the chairman of my son's school board of trustees. He is a kind man and a good doctor, and he will patch up my son's cheek and we'll head home. On the way, I will think about the poetry reading and how, beforehand, I met a man who makes furniture but originally trained as a fitter and turner. Do I know what that is? And how, in the middle of the reading, I glanced down at my book and a tiny green praying mantis scrambled bright and awkward over the page. I will tell my son about this. He will suggest I might have carried the insect in my bag all the way from Wellington, all the way from the vegetable garden in boxes. And I'll say, yes, I might have. And we'll agree that wherever it came from, it seems like a good sign. And we'll drive home, his eye matching sky, which is an easy rhyme, but pleasing to me nevertheless.